Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Dell's working on getting a hold of Pacandelis. Going to talk to him. If you haven't seen the scheme is awesome. It is about the FBI's investigation into college basketball where we've got the game plan. And it was a... It could not have been a bigger F-up by the FBI. And Christian Dawkins ended up suffering from this. Christian Dawkins was the facilitator for guys to get to college basketball and actually made a little on the side. And, you know, he did. He made a little bit. But who looked the worst in this? The worst was the FBI, who, and I've been saying this for I don't know how long, that the FBI is just after headlines with the university scandals, with, you know, Aunt Becky, with Robert Kraft. They spent 7 months watching Robert Kraft go in and out. They spent how much time with the college basketball scheme? They spent how much time on Aunt Becky and this? And it's just about headlines. That's all it's about. And Pat Candelis exposed this in the scheme as well. And he's joining us right now on ESPN 97.5. Pat, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I appreciate it. Yeah, can we start with the scheme?
Yeah, absolutely.
I thought you did an unbelievably a great job. And it was. I mean, that the FBI, you made the FBI look terrible, which I was very pleased with, by the way. How difficult is it? Because I wanted to talk to you. I talked to a ranger about Cody Mitchell and the FBI.
Oh, did you really? I know you know that.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah,
that ranger.
Yeah, I know the former head of the Rangers, and I talked to him about that. How difficult is it when the other side won't cooperate for you to? And he said, "Well, and this is exact words. Who's got the paintbrush?" So it's who is telling the story, and you were telling the story. But if the other side won't cooperate, how difficult is that?
It's difficult, but you know it varies depending on how much factual evidence you have, which you can look at objectively. And there was quite a bit in the scheme, and there's quite a bit in outcry as well. And I'm glad you liked the scheme, and it was not my intention to make the FBI look bad. They did that all on their own.
Yeah, they absolutely did. Pat Candelis with us here on ESPN 97.5. I'm so what you did over all of those years that you were following Greg Kelly around too, what you did, how difficult that is, and how much money that it costs you before you actually see anything coming in. Or do you have a deal with HBO before it comes out?
No, we actually, so we self-financed this for a good long time. I mean, more than probably a year and a half. And then Showtime bought it right when, you know, right about just past the midway mark. So it was a risk for us, certainly, because we jumped into something that was an ongoing legal case where you have zero control over what's going to happen. You don't know what the ending is going to be. You don't know if anything's going to happen. And then, you know, the way that it worked out in outcry with Greg Kelly's case is that right when we started filming, I mean, things happened rapidly, really, really fast. And then for almost 2 years, there was not too much going on. But it's interesting, within that two-year part, that's when I kind of got to know Greg, because we couldn't shoot with him while he was in prison and couldn't really build rapport with him. So he really becomes more of a three-dimensional character later on in the story, which was a unique experience for me.
I want to talk to you about, so the way that we consume, obviously, as I'm sure you know, when the lockdown started for us, sports stopped, Tiger King came on. It's like the whole nation watched Tiger King, is what it felt like.
And then Jordan.
And we were talking, yeah, and then the Jordan documentary. Huh. Yeah, you're right. And so those are the two things that we ended up talking about a lot on the radio. And Pat, you and I have known each other for a while, and I'm a guy who loves documentaries and will always watch all the docs that are leading towards Oscar stuff. But those are movies. Those are full-length movies that are 2 and sometimes 2.5 hours long. This is an opportunity to do. Now we're into docuseries and the scheme docuseries. This is a 5-part docuseries. Talk about the differences between doing a full-length movie versus a docuseries on a major network like Showtime or HBO.
I prefer this series almost always because it really allows you, especially when you're working with a premium network or a subscription-based network, right? If it's Showtime, HBO, or Netflix, where you don't have to worry about commercial breaks coming in, that can really mess with the flow of you telling the story and any kind of momentum that you're building there. So I really prefer to do this in multiple parts. Something like Outcry, there's no way you could have boiled that down to a 90-minute or 120-minute documentary. I mean, we were struggling to get the scheme down to 2 hours, and I feel like that moves pretty fast for a two-hour doc. So really, they become completely different stories when you have the opportunity to really get into the context and really sit with it. And I think it's ultimately, if it's a really good story, I think it'll resonate with the audience stronger if they can have all of that detail that you just can't do in a 90-minute or 120-minute doc.
So how did you pick the Greg Kelly story?
Well, it was one of those weird stories where, you know, people constantly come up to me and say, I got this great story for you, and 9.5 times out of 10, they're terrible. But a friend of a friend approached me. It was after a doc that we did for Showtime called Disgrace premiered at South by Southwest, and right after the screening, a friend of a friend said, you got to look at this Greg Kelly case. And I live in Williamson County where this happened, you know, just north of Austin, a suburb of Austin. And I didn't know anything about the story. I had been pretty much living on and off in Colorado for 2 years working on a CNN documentary series in 2013 and 2014. So I missed all of the original reporting when Greg Kelly was arrested and his trial, which was interesting too, because we came into this really with fresh eyes, not really having formed opinion on the case. And once I met with Greg Kelly's family and then spoke with his lawyer, Keith Hampton, and learned some of the details, I just got hooked. I couldn't stop thinking about it. And we kind of dove in head first.
You know, when you have something like that and you come in with fresh eyes, you still have to be committed you have to have a commitment to the documentary. And I'm kind of curious, the small town Texas, because you're from Texas, small town Texas, high school football, it had all the elements that you could want. I'm curious, as I was watching, I was curious, what did you think about Leander and all the people who kind of, it almost seemed like watching it blindly backed Greg Kelly without knowing, because we're talking about child molestation of a 4-year-old, and then it became 2 4-year-olds is what he was charged with. That's not a small offense. That's a big deal to get behind somebody who is accused of that. That's not easy in most communities. What was that community like when you spent time there?
Well, that's one of the most interesting parts of the story for me. Once we started digging in, there was a completely polarized community, and I think it's all because of look, Greg's status being a high school athlete that was a college commit, everybody knew who Greg Kelly was. That's what it really worked for him as a double-edged sword. He got support, and I think he got some blind support because he was a star football player that he would normally not have gotten. If it was a band student or somebody from the debate team that got accused of this, there wouldn't be groups standing up saying, hey, you know, this guy didn't do it. But on the flip side of that, you had the media here just relentlessly covering the story because star high school football player gets accused of something that's terrible. And I think that also worked to put pressure on the police and the prosecutors in the case. So that I thought was really interesting, that it's not, I don't really view it as a sports story, but the sports element of it, you know, was unique in my mind, that it worked for him in one sense and worked against him in another. And the community was clearly divided. It was a very polarizing issue. And most people on both sides felt really strongly, but they couldn't really, there wasn't a lot of facts that they were bringing up in their arguments for why they felt that way.
Pat Condellis with us here made The Scheme and Outcry. And on that note, I just never understood Jake Bryden. One of the first things, so how do you know Greg? I don't know Greg, never met him. And yet he's leading the charge.
All right, everybody, this is my bullhorn, and I'll be organizing this from now on.
Did you find this a little odd?
I did, but you know, Jake is really funny. Like, there's not, like, the whole story about Jake, I get this question all the time, like, where did this guy come from? Is he a lawyer? All that. Like, no, he's the 2 minutes where he kind of explains himself in F1, like, that's really the story.
I kept waiting for more of an explanation. Yeah. I'll be honest with you. I'm like, okay, something else has got to be coming.
Yeah, no, it's really just that. He didn't know, and somebody told him it was a sham, and I think he just kind of took it as a challenge. And the interesting thing about that, though, is, again, I think if you put that in context with the community in Williamson County, the fact that they had a history of wrongful conviction, all of that played into this. You know, if it was in a different place, I don't think there would be that many people willing to stand up. It was the combination, I think, of a county that was known for getting this wrong. And this is a popular, well-liked, never been in trouble, high school star athlete who had everything going for them, you know, and the timing of it was the summer before his senior year of high school. He had already committed to play football at UTSA. And it just seemed crazy that a guy that had this much momentum going for him would do something like this. So I think all of those things, you know, played a role in somebody like Jake, who'd never even met him, getting involved with this. Not that I still don't think that's crazy that he did that, but if he didn't do that, Greg Kelly's, you know, probably in prison right now.
So if you live there, if you get pulled mm-hmm. over there, are you worried about Sean? Because you didn't make Chris Daly, or
he doesn't live in Leander.
No, but in the county, if you get, well, suppose he's driving through. Maybe he didn't drive through. Sean Mannix, the chief of police,
he's a documentarian.
Chris Daly, or you know what? Maybe he's invested. You know what? If I'm you, you didn't make him look all that great there, Pat.
No, you know what? Like, I won't go through there. as dumb as that sounds, no, I'm. Cedar Park is like right next to Round Rock where I live. And yeah, no, I have friends there, and I'm like, no, you guys need to, you know, you can come over to my place. I'm not going to be going over to yours at this point. I don't feel comfortable about rolling through Cedar Park at this point.
Hey, Pat, no, sit tight with us if you can for let us get to a break real quick, and we want to dig in a little bit deeper with this. Pat Candelas is joining us right now. So your group is now, is it Batbridge? What's the name of your production company now?
Bat Bridge Entertainment.
So it is Bat Bridge. People who have been to Austin will recognize the phrase Bat Bridge, where that comes from. And we will talk a little bit more about this documentary, Outcry. And if you have, if you want to hit us on Twitter and ask about either that or the scheme, if you've seen the scheme, we can do that with you as well. He is the director. And then Greg Kelly, who is the subject of this documentary, is expected to join us just here a little bit later in the show.
About 8:30, right? Okay, so we're going to do that. We got, this is great stuff. Pat Candelas, don't you go anywhere. Right now, though, I got to talk about the Lance Loken Group. Listen, there's so many stories about people who had to sell their home in a hurry. Lance Loken will offer you he'll make an immediate cash offer to you. So you don't even have to, you don't have to prep, you don't have to show, no open houses. You go straight to sold. That's what Lance Loken will do every single time, and he's going to guarantee that he's going to sell your home, and if he can't, he will buy it from you. There are so many advantages to go into with somebody as big as Lance Loken, and they're the biggest, and they're the best, and they're unbelievable, and they get the job done, and they have more people. Here's the deal, is that it seems like every single house, it's like an auction. Instead of one person coming and, I'm not sure, they've got multiple people that are looking at this house, and that's what you get when you get Lance Loken and his group from Keller Williams Platinum. They are spectacular at selling your home. If you want to sell it in a hurry or you want to sell it immediately, 281-861-4624. 281-861-4624 or thelokengroup.com. That's the LOKEN group.com. Pat Candelas with us here on ESPN 97.5. Made the Scheme and Outcry, two great documentaries. If you haven't seen them, you really, really do. I thoroughly enjoyed The Scheme. I've got a buddy who's in the college, in the AAU world, and, you know, it was so interesting to see, because it is a secretive, and it is, we've always looked at the AAU as pretty slimy, but if you want to know the truth, nothing is as slimy. I don't know about you, Pat, but I found it was so unbelievable to me that they let a guy who bilked his clients out of $4 million, they let him walk so Christian Dawkins could do a couple of months in prison. That was, to me, was the most unbelievable thing ever. And I don't know, how did you look at the end and how that all turned out in the scheme?
I thought it was really, really crazy. And I think, you know, I do think that they were not wanting or expecting that Christian would be the guy that they got at the end of this. You know, I thought that they were really trying to get the coaches. And that was the thing that became, you know, the question that we were trying to answer is, look, if you're going to spend millions of dollars in 3 years on this undercover FBI investigation and go to all of this trouble to take down coaches, you hear the wiretaps, it's coaches, coaches, coaches. Well, at some point, they get quite a few wiretaps of Christian Dawkins talking to Sean Miller and Will Wade. And then not only do they not get those coaches in, it was the government, the prosecutors in the Southern District of New York that blocked them from coming in and that blocked those wiretap calls from getting played. So for me, it became a question of why did they do a 180? You know, why go through all of this? And then when you're right there on the finish line, not only do you pull back, but you completely do a 180, and now you're protecting the coaches that you were, you know, that your whole objective was to take them down to begin with.
What a waste of money. And what a waste that scumbag got walked because I got a better story for you. We can get college basketball coaches. And that's my problem with the FBI, because Aunt Becky's involved, because Robert Kraft is involved, and because you can get John Calipari or Rick Pitino, we're going to go after him, and we're going to spend millions and millions of dollars and spend years on these things because we can make a name for ourselves.
Yeah, it's you know, the Marty Blazer thing, to your point, is really interesting. Like, yeah, he got off completely. I never spent a day in jail, and he stole, I think it was $2.3 million from his client. Christian Dawkins gave money to people, and he got sentenced to the harshest sentence too. And I think it's because he fought. You know, that's the other thing. It's an odd way to view the justice system, that if you say you committed a crime, you won't be punished. But if you say, no, I didn't do that, I'm not guilty, and you fight, they're going to nail you as hard as they possibly can. So Christian got the harshest sentence out of anybody, 12 months and a day. That's, you know,
well, that's always, I mean, there's a recurring theme between the scheme and outcry, and we can get into that. But that's one of the things, is that Greg Kelly, who was accused of child molestation, was told, and I think it was probably, they may have had some doubts maybe on their side, but they said, the prosecution even said, okay, we'll give you 10 years probation. Started off as 20 years of probation. I think it started as 10 years probation. And 10 years probation, you have to take a sex offender label right for the rest of your life. And then they said, and Greg said no. Then they went all the way down to 5 years probation. Correct me if I'm wrong here, Pat. And then they said, and then he said no there. That was pretty strong to me. When you're willing to fight, he didn't want to have that sex offender label because he said he did not do it. He maintained his innocence. But man, you're looking at 25 plus years in prison versus a 5 year probation, or however long the probation was. Mm-hmm. Yes, you do have, if you have to register as a sex offender for the rest of your life, I mean, that's pretty terrible. But the decision to fight that, as opposed to and take your chances of going to prison, which he initially did, man, that's a pretty loud proclamation of your you know, of your innocence.
I agree, and you got it right on the offers. It was 10 years probation first, and then 5. And so what was striking to me about that, Lance, was that if you're the prosecutors here, right, and you know, slam your fist on the table and say, we're here for the victims and we believe in justice, if you believe that this guy molested 2 4-year-old boys, how in the world is him not spending a single night in jail justice?
That made no sense to me either. 5 years probation seemed super light for something that he's being accused of.
I don't know how, as a prosecutor, you could go to a parent and say, this is the guy that did this to your boys, but, you know, hey, we got him. We got him. Nope, he's not going to spend a single minute in jail, but we got him.
Right.
You know, justice is served. It's totally ludicrous. It's ridiculous. And I don't think for a second they thought they were going to win the case, which is why they offered 5 years probation. And the fact that, you know, there was a jury, 12 people said guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, there's no way to wrap your head around that. There's just no way. There was zero evidence. Literally, there was no witnesses. There was no physical evidence. there was a four-year-old who had just turned four that said the word Greg. That was it. And then you had police that didn't even go to the crime scene, didn't interview anybody. Zero investigation was done. And it's a minimum 25-year sentence with no possibility of parole. It's unbelievable that any of that happened.
Well, I don't know that it was all that unbelievable with the counseling that he, with the lawyer that he had. She couldn't, and that she is, she works for integrity in law now is so ironic when she could not have been worse.
How about the scenes when she had to get on the, okay, this is another one, Pat, that I was really.
There are so many.
I know.
Chris Daly, the detective that didn't do anything.
On the,
So, And led the four-year-old in the... there's so many things working against Greg Kelly.
So you mentioned on tape, you mentioned Jonathan. What was Jonathan's last name, Pat?
McCarty.
Yeah, McCarty. So you mentioned his name to the four-year-old, and the four-year-old does give an affirmation there, and then you didn't follow up and
Where did he hear Jonathan's name, though? Where did he hear... How did he even know Jonathan? That's another thing.
Well, because Jonathan.
If he knew
was,
Jonathan.
Right, right.
Well, if he knew Jonathan, why didn't he ever investigate him?
Jonathan was at the house, obviously. Yes. And he doesn't investigate. So, what we're telling you, if you haven't seen this, you do have to see it because it is. But I just. This is what I had a real. This is what I thought was highly unusual. And I had to text a buddy of mine who is, you know him too, assistant DA here, because I wanted to know how unusual this is. And luckily, you guys kind of covered this. The defense's side. So, a new after he was convicted, a new district attorney came in who reopened the case. Basically, said, "Man, this is pretty flimsy. I just for the sake of integrity, I need to open this case back up and allow because they want it open back up. Mm-hmm. I need to open it back up for us to take another look at it." And his side, his team, the DA's team, were actively going against. We're basically working as Greg Kelly's defense, it seemed like, almost. Like, I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah, it was. So, yeah, Sean Dick was the guy that was elected. He's the current Williamson County DA. And Sean Dick, he had been a prosecutor previously and a defense attorney. And so when he looked at the writ that was brought forward by Greg Kelly's current attorney, Keith Hampton, you know, he was like, there's some very compelling stuff in here. But, you know, he didn't want to just take his word for it. So he asked the Texas Rangers to come in and try to corroborate and verify some of the claims that were being made. And he needs to be applauded for that because that he did the hard thing. The easy thing to do would have been, no, hey, my predecessor did this. It has nothing to do with me. I'm not going to open up Pandora's box here and start looking at, you know, convictions that I had nothing to do with, you know. But, again, I think because of the history in Williamson County, he was trying to make a point and be completely transparent in everything that they were doing. And shockingly, I mean, we had just about full access. I mean, everything. They never said no to anything. So it was amazing from the judges to the sheriffs there, the DAs. They were an open book, which I was completely not expecting. And it was interesting to see how open-minded they were. But to be fair, though, too, the evidence was so insane, you know. And when you have a defense attorney under oath in the stand that's trying to say, you know, the fact that they look similar is a attorney-client privilege. That's just, it's laughable and crazy. And how she tries to wiggle her way out of answering a question that they looked alike.
Mm-hmm.
She got, you know, salty.
It's baffling.
Mm-hmm. I was amazed, though. So, yeah, I mean, how you make money on this with as much as you put into it, Pat, that you, how many times did you have to go to New York on a Wednesday morning just to be there and the CCA ruling didn't come down?
I think we did. I mean, I think the good part was Greg was in New York towards the very end. I think we did something. It was like over 60 Wednesdays total. And I think we did 4 or 5 in New York. And I think I flew up for like 3 of those. And then the last 2, I have a cousin that was a cameraman on that. And he was the one that was there for the big moment. I wasn't actually there. I did like 99% of those myself, which is me and Greg. And of course, the one I'm not there it happens.
It's got to be so maddening. And every Wednesday morning, he's looking to see whether or not he's exonerated. And no.
But the time. 2 years,
right? It was 2 years.
It was two.
Yeah.
That's 100 Wednesdays.
And we're there for the very first one. And you're like, your heart's in your throat because you think you're about to see it on the dock. And then you realize. We are a little early. Like we're in episode 4 when this is going on. But yeah, once it doesn't happen the first time, I had no idea that it could take that long. And we go through multiple different types of hairstyles for Greg throughout the documentary. For those who don't know, he went and worked out. So it's interesting, Pat, because I'm watching his little high school tape that he has from when he, you guys showed that as footage. You can see he's extremely fast. He was undersized as a sophomore, but he's extremely fast. Is something you can see, and he was going to go to UTSA on scholarship, probably a 2-star, I would assume, if you give it a star, is my guess. And then he goes to prison, he gets out, he starts training with a group in the Austin area, and you see him in training and the workouts, and just going by what was said by the trainer, he was able, you know, he performed at a He performed at a pretty high level. And he performed at a pretty high level there. Is there a realistic chance? Greg's texting me right now, so he'll be ready to go here in about 5 minutes. Did you get the sense talking to your people that he has a realistic chance of doing anything on the football in the football realm?
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, talking with his trainer, and then he was working out with Earl Thomas and Kenny Vaccaro.
Oh, wow.
And you know, we filmed him a couple of different times at that, and I would talk with these guys kind of off camera and just say, hey, what do you, like, give me, be honest. You know, I'm not going to tell Greg you said this, but what do you think? And Kenny Vaccaro told me off camera, he said, no, man, the first time that I worked out with him, I thought he played in the NFL. I didn't know who he was.
His body type looks like NFL. It. Yeah, he's got the frame. I can't wait. I mean, I'm just telling you, just sight unseen. And I texted him this when we were just going back and forth. You know, Texas is saying we're not taking this spring. They said we're not going to take any walk-ons or anything like that. I'm hoping your documentary shines a little brighter light so that he maybe does get an opportunity. Is he 25 now or 24?
I think he just turned 25.
Yeah, I was about to say. Well, listen. We're going to break it right now. If you sit tight, we're going to bring Greg Kelly on the show as well. Greg from the documentary Outcry, which is fantastic.
Pat,
it's on Showtime right now.
Fantastic job, man. Great job documentary. I loved it. And keep up the great work. The Scheme and Outcry. Y'all got to watch those because they are fantastic. You do great work. We appreciate you being here.
And it all started with a documentary, a mockumentary based on something we did on our show.
That's Keith Cornelius.
We kind of got Pat started.
Yeah, it's because of us.
I mean,
in my way. You do. You do. I owe you guys. Thank you very much.
We owe Craig the Surf.
Let me tell you something. When it comes to Craig the Surf, nobody has ever uttered a word other than this guy is about family and that his family is whatever dealership is working for. And I think this is going to be the one. Like, he was with a group here locally that was a really good group. It was bought by a national group that ended up running into the ground. But even before then, Craig bolted because he said it wasn't like family. And he went out to Angleton, and this was a match made in heaven because he is a guy who was able to take that same family idea and atmosphere and bring it to Angleton, which is a perfect fit. They've got so many different stories out there of people who have been taken care of beyond what the expectations are. And that's what he does. Whether you are looking for they have employee pricing going on right now on most of the vehicles in stock. And you can see for yourself the difference when you start negotiating price, when you start looking for your trade-in value. They make it so easy for you. They find what you're looking for. And it's always going to be about you. You control the car buying experience. They'll deliver it right to your doorstep in Houston. So forget the fact that it's Angleton. If that bothers you, you can shop online at LanceZCars.com. But once you make the trip down there, you're going to find out it was well worth it. Gulf Coast Chevrolet Buick GMC. 8:32 here on the bench. Lance Erline here. John Granato there. We've got Dell on the turntable. And, wasn't that great with Pat Candelas? Pat, I just love talking documentary stuff. We talked a lot about camera shots and things like that on the phone, and I'm going to get into a deeper dive into the whole series on Off Script with me and Eric Layden with him, I think, next week. And with this guy, Greg Kelly, who is the subject of the documentary Outcry, accused of child molestation, was found guilty, was sentenced to 25 years in prison, and fought for his innocence, and was eventually exonerated. I mean, hate to go spoiler alert, because I didn't know what the answer was going to be as I watched the five-part documentary myself. I'm sitting there wondering if Greg was going to go back to prison, and we have to spoil it for you a little bit now, because Greg is not calling us from a jail cell somewhere, from a prison. He is calling us. I don't know, Greg, are you in Austin right now? Where are you right now?
Yeah, so I'm actually at my apartment north of campus over here in Austin.
So you are out. You are free. This is something that went down for you in small town Texas. You're a very good high school football player. You got a scholarship to Division I, and then your life turns upside down. There's so many places to start. I do want to start at the very beginning, though, with when you were initially accused. Did you go through that process of thinking, well, this is clearly not true, and truth will prevail, and I will not go to jail for something like this? This is just so heinous.
Yeah, no. You know, when all this happened, man, I was a normal football player. You know, I was just a high school kid who just wanted to go to school and make good grades and just, you know, use football as an avenue to get into college and continue to play the game that I love. And, you know, when I was 18 years old, going into my senior year, I was still a junior, actually. It was the summer going into my senior year. I got falsely accused for a very heinous, monstrous crime. And when that happens to you, you just don't know what to do, because you know you didn't do it, and you don't understand what's happening. You don't know why you're getting accused of this. And at that time, I was just so trusting in the justice system to do the right thing, because within a couple of days, I knew that, you know, they got the wrong guy. This is a mistake. This is a misunderstanding, if it is true, you know. And so I had faith that everything was just going to work out and I was just going to go back to normal. But that wasn't the case. It actually went south really, really fast.
Greg Kelly with us here on ESPN 97.5. If you haven't seen the story, you need to watch Outcry. You can look it up. It's all over online, everything else. Accused, convicted, and then exonerated of sexual abuse of a young child. But let me ask you this, Greg, because I was wondering this. You were young, obviously. But Patricia Cummings and her defense of you, at any point did you say to her, hey, you know I didn't live there, right? Hey, why don't you ask this, or what's going on with my defense here that she didn't bring up any pertinent facts about to defend you in any way, shape, or form?
Yeah, so we brought a lot of things up to Patricia when I originally hired her as my first attorney, who actually was recommended to me by the McCarty family,
right,
which is Jonathan's mother. And so I had no idea that she had any involvement at first. I had no idea she had any involvement on representing all of her sons, all of Jonathan's brothers, in multiple different type of criminal cases involving aggravated cases and also sexually indecency cases. So I had no idea about that stuff. I just, you know, like I said, I was just a naive kid who didn't even know what a lawyer did, who didn't even know his rights and how to get a lawyer and how to call one. And so I was just like, you know, I need one right now, and I got her number, and we ended up having to pay her. I had no idea how much they cost either, and to see how much it was like, you know what, like, I need my life defended right now, so I need to do whatever it takes. So walking into this, I mean, there's a lot of things I did not even know. I didn't know because it was right on the front of the arrest warrant where the date was, when the date was. And I didn't know about that. She didn't tell me. She didn't ask me where I was on this day. She didn't let me know what the detective did and did not do. A lot of what he did not do, which was, you know, he didn't go to the house. He didn't take pictures. He didn't interview anybody, any other suspects in the house. He didn't interview any other children in the house. So like, she never told me any of this, so I really wasn't in the know on anything. She just pretty much said, hey, we still haven't heard anything from the investigation, but we have to keep waiting. And I thought that was strange, and me and my whole family thought that was strange, and it was we got aggravated. We got very, very mad that she wasn't giving us a lot of information.
Greg Kelly with us here on ESPN 97.5. I understand her motivation because she did work for the McCartys and she had a conflict of interest. What I don't understand is why did Chris Daly and why did Cody Mitchell dislike you as much as they did?
Yeah. You know, I kind of found out the motives on Chris Daly. You know, that guy, he really just doesn't deserve a badge. I don't think he's smart enough to be a cop. I just honestly do not think that he has the moral compass and the ethics to wear a badge proudly with honor, because there are a lot of honorable cops. I'm friends with a lot of them, but there are some bad ones out there that they're in it for themselves. They're in it to get a promotion. They're in it to get on the map, you know, as a detective. And that's exactly what happened. You know, the day I got wrongfully convicted and got sent away, the very next day or in the very next couple of days, I can't remember specifically, but he got promoted to sergeant over many, many detectives. And now what's totally scary to me is, if you live in the city of Cedar Park, would you really, really want that guy to be the sergeant over many detectives that have the power to falsely accuse you and have him teach his techniques on an investigation to many, many, many police officers? And that's kind of where we're at right now. That's why we're seeking accountability, is because simply what happened to me could happen to you. And if this guy continues to wear a badge.
And that's always the scary thing, Greg, is people put themselves in every situation. And so when you put yourself in that situation of what you were in, now granted, John and I are much further removed from high school than when you were accused. But when you put yourself in there and you see how basic clues were not followed up on, how basic investigation didn't take place, what does happen is, I wasn't looking at this as, wow, that could have been me and I could have been in prison.
Well, I'll tell you what, though. I watched that whole thing. Like, I honestly could relate to it because I had a high school scholarship, Rice scholarship. And I watched that whole thing and I go, that could be JT. That could be my son.
Well, I looked at it like this. Well, that could be me if a justice system, or that could be how many hundreds or thousands of people who are in prison wrongly accused because somebody just didn't do basic detective work.
Right.
That's what really hit me, is that how many innocent people right now, and then how many innocent people who are accused of child abuse, which I'm telling you, we know they don't get treated well in prison. And you briefly brought that up in the documentary, if you want to expound on, you know, how you were treated when you were incarcerated.
Right. And just to touch base on what you were saying earlier, until laws change and, you know, accountability is had for these detectives, and also standards created on investigation, and, you know, somebody policing the police on how to investigate, it's going to continue. I mean, you can just get accused of one thing and they can take it all the way to a grand jury. And if you get indicted, they take it all the way to a trial. And if it's you, your word against the victims, and if all nine jurors believe the victim, you're going to prison for how many years? I mean, that's literally what the law says that they could do to you. So that's what happened in my case as well. Now on your next question about going to prison labeled as a child molester, it is the worst thing that you ever be labeled, because it is worse than a murderer. You get treated so much more worse as somebody who does something to a child, and you have to look over your back each and every day that you're in there. You have to make sure that you walk around with caution, and you've got to, you know, you never have to feel, you can never feel comfortable while you're in there, because you don't know if somebody's going to do something to you. And there was cases where I've had to defend myself because people just simply hated me. It didn't matter what type of person I was, or it didn't matter how I treated them, or, you know, they hated me simply for the fact of what I was labeled and what the state of Texas has labeled me. And that was heartbreaking. You know, it was like, man, I'm trying to survive. I'm trying to get back to my family. I'm trying to have the truth prevail. But at the same time, I'm having to literally watch out for my life. And I've had to do that on many a couple occasions.
Greg Kelly with us here on ESPN 97.5. Can you stay for another segment?
Yes, of course.
Okay. Greg Kelly is going to be with us here on the other side. If you've got a question, you can tweet us at John Granato, at Lance Zierlein, or at Delvey2, or all three of us. And Greg Kelly from Outcry with us here. He lived it. He lived the documentary.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So before we get back to that, I do want to mention that, as a matter of fact, it's funny you mentioned that. I was looking at Showtime, their documentary. I mean, not their documentary, but their website. And I noticed that they had made a lot of changes to it. These big companies, a lot of times you'll notice rebrands and kind of updates to websites on a relatively frequent basis. Within 2 years, there's usually a different interface to a lot of apps. There's different interfaces with websites. And that's because they understand that you need to freshen up your website. You need to have a new look, a new design, but also the newest technologies. And what SiteJab right here in Houston does is they help to keep your website updated. And that's a big deal for small to medium-sized businesses, because a lot of the people who are going to potentially use your service, the first thing they're going to do is go to your website, and they want to know more about you. And if your website's dated, if your website is hard to manage, if your website is not professional, it really will subconsciously have an impact on whether or not they're going to use your service. You want something that excites and informs the visitor, and then allows you, that allows you to maybe convert those eyes into leads. And that's the big deal. And that's what my friends over at SiteJab can do for you. They can work for you and with you here in Houston on location or through Zoom if need be. Go to SiteJab.com, SiteJab.com. That's SiteJab.com.
This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Welcome back on ESPN 97.5. Greg Kelly, wrongly accused of child sexual abuse, exonerated, with us here on ESPN 97.5. You're at the University of Texas? Are you enrolled this fall?
Greg? I got admitted to the University of Texas for this past spring semester. Right after I got exonerated in November, funny, crazy story. Me and Gabriel were actually living up in New York at the time. She took a really, really awesome opportunity to continue her dance education up there on the Broadway, on Broadway up there. So we lived up there for a few months while we were waiting for me to get exonerated, and Pat and the film crew went up there and continued to do every Wednesday that you could see on the dock, every Wednesday, 9 a.m., check the list to see if I'm on it from the CCA's hand down on decisions on cases. So I got exonerated while I was up there, actually, and there's footage on that on the dock. And right when that happened, we immediately the next day got a plane down to Texas, went to the exoneration hearing. And right after my exoneration hearing, I kid you not, that very night, I contacted UT, and I was like, man, I want to go here. And for the longest time, I wanted to go to UT ever since I was a little kid, and that was actually the plan, going to go play football at UTSA and then, hopefully transfer within a year or two to get to Texas and be a Longhorn. And so right when I got exonerated, I knew nothing was holding me back anymore to apply to UT, so that's what I did. And I had to jump through the appeal process because I missed the spring deadline for applications. And I jumped through the appeal process through one of the administrators. And I won my appeal. And then I filed my application. Within 2 weeks, I got that letter. You have been admitted to the University of Texas. So, yeah, I just finished up my spring semester. It was great. And I'm over the summer, I'm starting a small business. Took some time to do that. And then I'm starting up again in the fall, hopefully, and praying that I play football.
So have you talked to Tom Herman?
So I've talked to him. We had brief conversation one time at a practice I got to sit in on right before the Alamo Bowl. And I shook his hand. We got to exchange a few words. But as far as sitting down with him, I haven't had that one-on-one conversation with him yet. I did try out this past February. I've been training for the past, 2 years to for that opportunity. That's why I was training with Jeremy Hills and the NFL guys over those that long period of time. But I never got to sit down with them. I did try out. I got an answer back for the spring. This is right when COVID hit, too, and things were kind of getting crazy. That, you know, they weren't just going to take in any walk-on this spring. There wasn't any room. So I'm waiting back for a decision in the fall. Hopefully I can get that call and suit up and go improve myself.
So I'm going to be on a virtual sit-down with Tom Herman on Thursday.
Awesome.
What would you like me to ask him?
I honestly, more than anything, I just respectfully ask him just for me to sit down and get to share my heart with him and kind of get to know each other. I'd like to get to know him on a personal level and kind of tell him a little bit about my story and about my life and what I can contribute to the team. You know, I've got big dreams to go play football again, and I've wanted to play at UT since I was a little boy. Man, it's just there's a few things that I really, really, really want in this world and what I really, really love. And I got to marry the number one love of mine back in January. My mm-hmm. second love is football. So I definitely want to take a crack at that as well.
So it's funny because I reached out to one of their guys, and I'm kind of starting a process for you to get that look. You kind of have to follow a little chain of command to make sure it goes up. And I think that you're going to be helped out by the fact that there is this documentary. And I wanted to mention two people to give you a chance to talk about them. One is your now wife, Gabri, because here's one of our listeners said, how about this girl sticking by his side the whole time? Wow. You know, for her to stick, it's hard enough high school sweethearts to stick together anyway. Then to stick together through this is even more unusual. I want you to talk about her and also Pat Condellis, because and Jake Bryden as well. Jake, who just came in out of nowhere, didn't know you, and spearheaded something that really helped get momentum for you. And then Pat, who all he's doing is capturing what's going on is all he's doing. However, because he sends that message out through Showtime, more people will know you. And I think that does give you an opportunity maybe that wasn't there to get a tryout with Texas when maybe they'd say, 25-year-old guy who, I mean, we're not going to bring that guy on the roster, but now all of a sudden, maybe you do get some opportunities. And maybe talk about those three people for a second, if you could.
Absolutely. I can talk about those guys forever. Man, I tell you, I'll start with, you know, Pat, and I'll leave my beautiful wife for last.
Yeah.
So Pat came in, you know, very skeptical. He came in, I remember he kind of heard word from one of his assistants or somebody working in his office back in, like, you know, when I was like a year in prison. And he was like, yeah, it kind of sounds too good to be true. Like, you're telling me there's a problem with his lawyer and there's no evidence, there's, you know, bad police. I mean, it sounds like the perfect storm, right? And it's been mentioned, that phrase has been mentioned over and over again in the documentary, the perfect storm. And that's just when everything goes wrong at the same time. And so Pat was very skeptical, but he met with my parents. And, of course, I'm still in prison, and he met with my parents and sat down, and they talked about my life and who I was. And then he was like, okay, it's pretty interesting, right? But I want to go and make this more valid and so just get this story more true. So he went to go talk to my coaches, and my coaches kind of said the same thing. And then he went to go talk to my friends. And then he was like, okay, he did a bunch of interviews, and he's like, I need to go talk to Greg himself. So he talked to me. We had a very, very, you know, it started off, of course, you know, hi, how you doing? My name's Greg and this and that. And then he started asking some challenging questions, you know, and I've always been about challenging questions, because right now I'm in this point where I've got to accept the reality that I need to completely make myself vulnerable, because I have now been found guilty, and now I've got to work so hard to prove my innocence and have the truth go forth. So I sat down with him, and we talked over and over and over again, and they were great conversations. They were heated conversations. But at the end of the day, I've got so much respect for the man, because he took a chance on this, because one thing told him, and one thing I remember him telling me, like, man, something within me just like, man, when I heard about Patricia, I just had to jump in. And then when I jumped in, I found out and turned over all these other stones. And he said it was one of the most difficult things ever, because it was done in real time. Most documentaries and directors, they go and gather documents from, you know, years in the past. And he said it was just so difficult, but I got tremendous respect. I grew a friendship with him over the time. But at the same time, this man is the most professional. You can't get any more professional than this guy. So, now Jake Bryden, on the other hand, I don't know. I didn't know Jake whenever he came into this whole deal. He actually, so rewind a little bit and kind of introduce him. He actually went to Leander High School way before me, maybe like 10 or 15 years before me. And he had Gabriel's dad, my wife's dad, as a leadership coach. And Gabriel's dad was known as like the coach. You know what I mean? He was always there for the guy. He's a very upright, Christian, moral man, tons of integrity. He's known throughout the community as the guy who will sit down and just give you his ear and talk to you, you know? And so Jake saw my father-in-law weeping and crying on TV after I was torn away from my family. And Jake was like, man, that's Coach Anderson. And I'm just thinking, like, if his daughter's boyfriend just got falsely accused and wrongfully convicted, I got to call them and see what's going on with this thing, because that's just not right. And so Jake called David, and this was a few days after I was convicted. Calls them and says, hey, I want to talk to you about Greg, because I just saw you on TV. What's going on? Tell me about this Greg guy. And David tells him, he's like, you know, Jake, Greg's a great guy. He's my girlfriend's boyfriend, or he's my daughter's boyfriend. And he's being torn away from us, and there's just nothing we can do about it. He's innocent. And Jake's like, now, if you're telling that there's nothing we can do about it, then you're telling the wrong guy that, David. Because if he's innocent, then we're going to fight. And I'm going to go do my own investigation. I'm going to see. And if there's anything that pulls up on Greg, then in the documentary, he said, I'm going to turn from being your best friend to your worst enemy. So that's how Jake is, right? You're either with him or against him. And so he went to go do his own investigation. And Jake, man, out of nowhere, he said, you know, man, when I did it, Greg, I couldn't sleep at night. Like, my spirit grieved for you. And I had to do something because I just couldn't sleep. And so he led the charge vocally. He actually... me and my family didn't have any money at the time, because all our money was wrapped in Patricia. We sold the house that we grew up in to hire her. And my mom had to move to an apartment. And so that's what really just doesn't sit well with me right now, is how much money we have to put out for these people. And they don't, my interest wasn't with her at all. And so that's how Jake got involved. And, you know, Jake is a very, very good friend of mine now, and we're continuing to develop a friendship. But, man, that man is a fighter. And lastly, I want to talk about Gabriel, my wife. That woman right there, she has a wisdom and strength that surpasses all her years. I mean, that girl, the way that she stuck by my side, I can't think of any other woman in this world, personally, that would do that for me. Me being labeled what I was and being falsely accused, and having to go through all that, it wasn't just me going through all that. It was her. She missed a lot of opportunities. She was judged many times. People have called her name. They've called her a child molester supporter, a child molester lover. And she had to be in, those wounds were so inflicting on her. But you know what? She's the type of girl that she's going to tuck her chin, and she's going to keep going forward. That's about how she was taught by David and her father. And so it was amazing kind of getting to know her in that process, because going to prison, we were forced to fall in love with each other, taking away the physical. So we got to fall in love with each other's heart. So when I got out, man, we were on top of the world. We knew each other like the back of our hands. I mean, we played 20 questions. We wrote each other every day. We were present with each other. And so And right now, I'm just we're loving every bit of the married life, and we're starting this small business, and it's just it's phenomenal. Great, guys.
Let me ask you this: they mentioned briefly, and you don't have to give us a number, but you were compensated by the city or by the county or whomever. Did that make up for what you paid Patricia? Did that make up for? It obviously can't make up for the years you spent in prison. But was it something decent?
So that's the thing. So I'm gonna just explain to you the boilerplate language for the Wrongful Incarceration Act. That becomes enabled whenever you become an exoneree for the state of Texas. And what that act says is that if you're falsely convicted, right, and you're proven innocent, then you get a lump sum of $80,000 for every year you spent. And I spent 3 years, so that comes out to about $240,000, on top of an annual annuity of 5% of that number for the rest of your life every month. And then, free medical bills and like medical insurance. And then you also get 120 free credited hours, so bachelor's degree, to any state university that you can get into. So, I mean, ultimately, it sounds like a pretty sweet deal, but kind of losing the opportunity that I lost at a young age, having to be labeled and thrown into prison, a place full of hate and violence, having to watch over my life each and every day, the wounds that my family were inflicted upon, and also just not spending valuable time with my dad on the last 2 years of his life. He died while I was still going through this from a stroke. And that happened before I was accused. And we were fighting really hard for him to get better. And losing those precious moments, you can't put a price on that. So I did not. So with you asking me if I accepted it or not, I put that on hold against NCAA Cedar Park and Chris Daly and Sean Mannix. That's what it states as well, is that if you want to sue any government entity that did this to you, then you have to put that compensation on hold until that lawsuit is resolved, and you have a three-year window, statute of limitations, to do that. So that's what I'm doing right now. Is I'm doing it, and it's not because I want to get it straight. It's not because I'm money hungry. It's not because I want money. It's because if you look at the documentary, everybody that did this to me is not being held accountable. Nobody. It's completely backwards. So detectives get promoted, Chris Daly. DAs become judges, Alfred Puryear. And Patricia Cummings becomes the head of the Conviction Integrity Unit in Philadelphia. Everything's backwards. John Mannix tried to become the city of Burnett here in Texas police chief. After he got ran off, he got to honorably retire from Cedar Park. That city never held him accountable. The city of Cedar Park actually swooped it under the rug. And hopefully Greg Kelly can go away. That's what happened. So for the fact that these people weren't held accountable, this is literally gearing it up to happen again. And that's what we don't want. So we don't want this to happen again, ever, in our county, in our city, in our state, or in our nation. So accountability is so important. And so they're not taking responsibility for their actions, and that's why I'm seeking a lawsuit against these guys.
Yeah, man of principle. We saw that at the very outset when you wouldn't take the you wouldn't take the plea agreement. That's Greg Kelly. You can find him on Instagram, G.R. Kelly. That's K-E-L-L-E-Y 2, G.R. Kelly E-Y 2. At the end, he's verified, and you can kind of go see him. You can also see what his business looks like is going to be. We got to break it there. But if you haven't seen it, go check out the documentary. It's well worth your time. It's called Outcry, and you can find out a little bit more about the story that we've been talking about. Greg, thanks for taking the time, and John and I will do our part to give you a little push so that you get that opportunity to at least get, you know, at least get the best shot that you can to go live out that dream that unfortunately got upended because of your wrongful conviction. So we appreciate you spending time, and we appreciate the fact that you had all that play out on the
on a documentary, and you're willing to come on the air and talk about it. We great interview, and look forward to future success from you. I'm sure it's coming.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you guys so much for having me. Appreciate you. God bless y'all. I'll talk to y'all later.
All right.
Thanks, Greg.
That's Greg Kelly right here on ESPN 97.5. What a great hour. If you haven't seen Outcry, you need to watch it. It is a fantastic documentary.
Scheme, too, while you're at it.
At times, it's hard to watch.
It is, because the subject, because you have kids, you say, well, that could be me, or that could be my son, Greg Kelly. You know, that could be your son when he was younger, or your daughter, right. The little girl. Because I don't want to give too much away, but it's not like they found a lot of justice for the kids either.
No, nothing. It was unbelievable. So great, Pat Candelas, thank you. Greg Kelly, thank you. And thank you to the Chastangs, my peeps over there. Patrick Chastang, Joe Chastang, just doing wonderful things. And here we still got the COVID, and it's still going on, and it's maybe as bad as ever. And so you don't want to go out. You don't want to go to a dealership. You don't want to be around people. That's fine. You can go online at ChastangFord.com. You can buy at home, and they've got unbelievable deals. They'll do everything. They will deliver the car to you so you can test drive it. If you have issues that you need service, they will pick up the car, they will fix it, and they will sanitize it and bring it back to you as well. All of these things are going on at Chastang Ford. You can actually buy virtually. You can buy online, which you can't do at other dealerships because they want you in the dealership so they can upsell you. That's not the case. At Chastang Ford, the number one thing for them is one of the first things they ask me is, where do you have to have your payments at? Because we'll get them down there. You will get you the best car that we can possibly get you with all of the added, everything added that you want in there, and we'll get you at the payments that you need. Because they got unbelievable payments right now, 72 months, 84 months, interest-free payments, nothing down, and 0%. I mean, And no payments for 6 months. This is just the best time to buy, and Chastang's the best place to buy it. Chastang Ford at ChastangFord.com, ChastangFord.com, or on 610 at Homestead, not Hempstead, 5 minutes from downtown, Chastang Ford.